It's episode 38.
Isn't that great? It's 38.
It's Ethnically Ambiguous with Anna.
And Shireen.
Sometimes Anna.
It just depends on her mood.
Yeah, it really does. And we are joined today by a very, very special guest, Miss Danny Fernandez.
Woo! Yay!
We talk about so much good stuff, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned!
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Wow! Hello. Wow! Hi! Hello!
Wow!
Wowie! Wow! That's it's my episode 38?
38.
Correct, I think. That's correct.
Is it 38, Sophie?
It's 38.
It's 38.
38.
Sophie knows more than anyone.
Welcome back to Ethnically Ambiguous.
Wow. It's my Owen Wilson. Wow.
That's pretty good.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
This week,
we have a guest.
Yeah, we have a very special guest here, Danny Fernandez.
Wow.
That's how we're yeah,
mine sounds
you.
Like the little aliens from Toy Story.
Wow.
They are. They're
the claw.
Yeah, yes. What are they? They're all like, pick me, yeah. Or something like that.
They're stuck in that claw machine. They're the claw is their god.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
Just messed up the reality, yeah.
Toy Story's levels.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Most of those films do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Toy Story has, or at least I think it's like Toy Story 2 or 3 has like elements of The Shining in it. Like
what?
They specifically put that in there from Lee Unkrich or whatever. Yeah, the director.
Oh,
he
damn.
Loves The Shining, so he like put it in there.
Damn.
News
at levels.
The more you know.
Yeah. So I met Danny here at How Stuff Works.
Mm-hmm.
We had you on to do Daily Zeitgeist.
Yes.
And then we brought your podcast Nerdificent on.
You did.
And then I am your producer for that.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a constant communication every single day of our lives.
We have a group chat.
It's so insane. People don't realize how much goes when you're making like a professional level podcast, mm-hmm. how much goes into it when
it's
you're
all day, every
working
day.
For a network. Yeah.
Yeah.
We text so much.
We do. I think I texted you last night at like 10 p.m.
Yeah,
and then I think this morning and it's just like, remind me of this. And also this. Here's some pictures. Here's a random G.I. Joe YouTube.
Yeah. And then I'm like, I need a photo of your ID.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just giving you like my social security number.
And I'm like, and mother's maiden name?
Did you have a podcast before Nerdificent?
Yeah. Iffy, my co-host, and I did a Dragon Ball Z podcast.
Dope.
And then that got picked up by Hyper RPG, which is a Twitch channel where we were doing like it live. We were doing like a live after show after Dragon Ball Super, which is huge. It was so big this year, the last 2 years actually. But yeah, so we were doing that. And then the good people at How Stuff Works were like, hey, do you want to not just talk about Dragon Ball? Do you want to talk about all nerd things? Because we think that that would even hit a bigger audience. And
yeah.
So that's what we have been doing.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm a self-proclaimed nerd, so I'm all for that.
You would like the podcast.
Yeah.
You are wearing a NASA shirt.
I bought both my shirt and my jacket from the little boys section at Target this weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
My How Stuff Works headshots are with the NASA shirt from Target, so.
It's just the way to go.
Fake nerds.
No, real nerds. Well, let's get into, like, who you are as a person for people that don't really know who you are. Tell us, like, I don't know.
Give us the 1-2 pitch.
Yeah, the 1-2
oh,
pitch.
God, or myself.
Oh, just like where were you, like where you grew up and maybe just how you got into this biz?
I grew up kind of between California and Texas. I spent a lot of time. My family's from San Diego, so I grew up a little bit in San Diego and in Orange County. And then when I was about 13 or 14, my dad moved us to Texas, and I lived a little bit outside of Dallas in a town called Frisco. It was very much, at the time, kind of Friday Night Lights-ish, where everything would shut down on Friday. Even if you didn't have kids, you would go to the high school football game. My brother was a varsity player, and that was a big deal. He was, like, in the Dallas Morning News. It was just, like, a big, huge deal. And we were these, like, new kids from California, so I was popular, like, by proxy, just from, being in close proximity to him. And Yeah, yeah. So and then I graduated. I went to the University of Texas in Austin, which I loved. I honestly wish, though, that I had partied more.
Yeah.
Especially because I don't use my degree now. I was a journalism major at first, and then I switched to kinesiology.
That's interesting.
Well, I needed a way to make money when I was right. in college. And so my friends were like teaching fitness classes at the university. And then a lot of them were kinesiology majors. That's exercise science. And I was like, this is way more fun than I'm like contacting my senators and writing up papers and stuff. So especially Texas politics, which is not fun.
Yeah.
And so I was double majoring, and then I was like, this is stupid. And then I just went full kinesiology.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun, especially at UT when the majority of the money is funneled into, like, their football and sports right. program. So yeah. taking those classes and, like, working out with Olympic coaches and things like that. My family's very athletic, so that was something that I enjoyed doing. And then I went to work at cardiac rehab. It's like cardiac rehabilitation.
Oh God, I thought it was like a rehab for cardiacs. Yeah.
Okay. No, it's just like people that have had open heart surgery and stuff. It's like helping them, you
still
know, exercise
Texas?
Again. Still in Texas.
Yeah.
And then I moved. I'm almost getting to how I got into comedy. So then I got married.
Whoa.
Everybody was getting married pretty much like right out of college. When you are in Texas, like if you're not married right after college, people, I don't know how it is now, but this was about 10, maybe like 8 years ago.
Okay.
People will start asking you like what's wrong.
Right.
The little old ladies at my hospital would ask me all the time why my boyfriend hadn't put a ring on my finger.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got married. I moved to Denver for my husband's job. We were the same age. We had dated for about 5 years, which is a good chunk of time. That's
oh,
like
for sure.
20 years here in yeah. Hollywood. We bought a house. I was like a whole other person. I had a house, two dogs, like, you know.
The married life.
Married life. I was miserable. I hated it. I hated like moving for his work, especially after I had put in, you know, time for me, and I felt like I was talented, and I wanted to move to LA to write. I'd always been into creative writing and journalism, and that was originally my degree, and so I wanted to get back into writing and also kind of like transition into TV and comedy, and he just didn't. Yeah, I don't think that he was supportive of it.
Mm-hmm.
We slowly started separating. He moved into our guest room. I don't know how dark I'm supposed to be.
Oh, as dark
okay.
as you want. Yeah. So how old were you guys when you got married?
We were like 24, 25. Okay. Our marriage only lasted a year.
Okay.
I would not recommend moving up into the mountains where you know no one and it snows in May.
That like, sounds isolating.
It's so isolating. And we were in a suburb that was like 1,000 feet up from Denver. So it got even more snow.
Right.
And everyone around us was depressed.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people in those towns, maybe if you're not from there, it's like you get seasonal depression, but it's like the entire season, like it's year round. I remember it snowing in May and I was driving to work just crying. Like it was too much.
Yeah.
You know, it's too much to be like locked indoors. We definitely had like cabin fever being around each other. And the first month it's like, oh, it's so beautiful. Look at the snow.
Yeah.
And then after 2 months you're like, I cannot handle this.
Right.
And how much it affects your life as well. Like you don't realize like when you're coming out of a mountain, it takes like an hour to get to work. You know what?
Yeah.
Normally it would take you like 30 minutes. So stuff like that, that starts. And when you get off work, it's dark and like, I don't know. So we had a lot of issues. Our house, I'm pretty sure, was haunted.
Oh, no.
People told us that when we moved in.
Yeah.
And we were like newlyweds. So I was like, thanks. You know, like, thanks. I just bought this house.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think I'm supposed to do with this. Pretty sure it was haunted. And because a lot of weird shit happened.
Damn.
When he was gone.
Oh, no.
Fast forward to me moving out here.
Was this, you got a,
so
you
got,
separated and then?
We separated and then we eventually, we filed for divorce right before I left. He actually drove me to my aunt lives, well, my family lives out here, but my aunt lives in like Temecula. And so he actually drove me there with some of my stuff. I'd left everything.
Did you guys leave on okay terms?
Yeah, I think it was because we were so young. Yeah. We started dating when I was 18, and we loved each other, and we had been there for each other through a lot, but we just grew.
Yeah.
We grew up, mm-hmm. and we outgrew each other. And I don't blame him for wanting his own goals in the same way that I don't blame myself.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
And I think if one of us was willing to give up on that. But now I just, and people write me like, marriage is a compromise. I'm like, yeah, but look at how good I'm doing. but look at how good I'm doing though. Yeah. You know, like you wanted me to give this up and be a housewife, which I think is fine. My sister-in-law is one and loves it. But I think if you are pursuing something different, like that makes her happy. It didn't make me happy.
Exactly.
And so I think you have to do what makes you happy. If having children and being a mom is your number one goal, then do that.
Yeah, but if deep down you have like a drive for something else, you should you should respect that and do it.
And it's not that I don't think that moms can do both. I just know I probably couldn't.
Right.
I couldn't move out here and have kids and try to. I was living in a one bedroom with like two other girls and their dog. I went from having a house to like being poor as hell and rationing out like trail mix. It was so, I mean, LA is so brutally hard. It's so brutally hard. So yeah.
So when did you move here?
I moved here in like 2013.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's like around the same time I moved here.
I'm curious, in your family, like, was it common to get married early? Like, or was that just kind
of... Yeah, the thing about my family is they're really religious.
Okay.
So my mom and dad, they were together for 25 years, even though my dad cheated on my mom a ton.
Sure.
And my family is extremely Catholic. We're, like, Latin Catholic and Irish Catholic. Irish on my mom's side. So I feel like that's, like, the most Catholic anyone could be.
Yeah.
Those two combined. But, yeah. So my family is very religious, and they kind of believe that everything should stay in the family. So if you have issues, it should all stay in the family. And I imagine that other families that have immigrant parents and stuff feel that way as well.
Yeah, that's quite common, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a thing that...
Did they disapprove of the divorce or the separation?
Yeah, definitely. They definitely disapproved of that. And I don't know. I just remember I'm so open, especially if you like follow me on social media and like the comedy I do. I just am so open about all the things that I deal with, like my divorce and depression. I have two chronic illnesses, an autoimmune disorder. And so I can't. I think because my family was so secretive, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know. So my grandmother, she fled here from Mexico because her husband, who was a Mexican politician, was assassinated.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know that.
Whoa.
I didn't know that until I was in my, like, mid-20s.
Holy shit.
I didn't know that my dad had a different dad than his siblings. Because what happened was my grandmother came over here. She met my grandfather, who was a Mexican man serving in the Navy. And he lied about his age to serve in the U.S. Navy.
Oh.
So, like, there's a lot of lying in my family, which I get. Like, I get, you know, I understand that it's for survival, but it's difficult for me because I didn't really know a lot of my heritage, like my history, my family history, because they kept those things secret to protect us.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty common, I feel
I feel like, it resonates for sure with me and like just...
In my family, if some like a tragedy happens, it takes, like if someone dies, like it takes like a week or two for me to like... start questioning my parents aggressively, like, tell me just what happened, and they're like, oh, you know, it's
exactly.
My dad always says there's like just a lot of there's a lot going on, it's hard to explain. You're like, just say the person died or something, like it's not that hard, stop keeping secrets.
It's really interesting. So you said, so you're half Mexican and half Irish?
No, I don't know. My mom's more of like a mutt.
Okay.
If you were to see her, we look like exactly alike. Everyone's like, how is she not Latina? I'm like, I'm pretty sure that she has something in her, but I don't know what it is. She should do the
23andMe.
Yeah,
I did
whatever.
That. I did that. Me and my mom both did that. Yeah. What did you discover?
I did
anything?
my DNA heritage. Yeah, I discovered that I had a lot of South American in me.
Nice.
I just, it was the full like Latin American spectrum. Because I always just tell people, oh, I'm Mexican. Yeah. Or like, yeah, my family, I'm like half or whatever. I don't know what my mom's side is. And then it was like, oh, no, I actually have a lot of other places as well. So
did you grow up being like proud of your Mexican heritage or?
Yeah, I think it was never something that was questioned, honestly, until I moved to LA and started doing auditions. Because the places that I lived in, like if you live in Orange County and you're not like a white girl named Brittany, then, you know, they're going to assume that you're, especially with all the Spanish names there, like everyone just assumes that any Latino person is Mexican, which is problematic.
Yeah.
Even though they were right about me. And the same with Texas. When you're in Texas, they just assume any Latino person is Mexican. So I never had the option of, I didn't fit in. I didn't look like the white girls. I had an ass and tits and lips and like, you know, I developed curves. And my mom was actually teased a lot for her lips growing up. They used to call her Sandy Big Lips. I made a post about that because my lips are so like, I love them so much and they're so luscious and it's just,
yeah,
I don't know, it's a shitty thing that you have to deal with.
It's shitty, you know? Also because like people like Kylie Jenner have now made it like Kylie Jenner lips. Like they're taking the things that like minorities, especially like Latina and black minorities, like the things that they were caricaturized for and torn apart for are now things that are Kylie Jenner's.
Right. Like us hearing that our hoop earrings are like ghetto or whatever now in. So I never really heard that until I came here and I started auditioning here, and I would have like white directors being like, oh, well, you're not like Mexican enough. You know, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. Can you show me? And normally their interpretation of it, of them pretending to be a Mexican person, is just the most racist thing ever.
I can't imagine.
Right. They want you to almost be like, I don't. That's so crazy. Because you were like, I don't want to be a racist portrayal. Like, I lived it. My father was from Mexico.
Right. Like, yeah. So, that's wild. And it's kind of like, I don't know if it was Aziz that said this or somebody, but like, because he doesn't have an accent and they would want him to put it on. Yeah. And sometimes it's, I understand it, but like when it's a caricature of it, you know what I mean?
It's just disheartening when you go into audition for something and they want you to almost make fun of yourself.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It's the punching down of it. Yeah. It's that the character is not, because there's nothing wrong. I mean, we look at Diego Luna, like he's been successful and been able to keep his accent and still be successful, where a lot of actors maybe a decade or two ago couldn't do that. Yeah. And
but his characters aren't about his accent. They're not like,
I totally agree with that. Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's a touchy subject, I would say.
Because I have so much respect for people that have accents because it proves that that wasn't their first language. And it's so hard to speak in another language in a country that doesn't speak the first one that you learned or whatever. So it's just annoying when that's used against those people because they're smarter than the vast majority of like the people that are making fun of them.
Yeah,
well, that's what sucks about stereotypes when you're growing up in America.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I'm not like, I have culture, but I'm not, I'm not that person. Like I was just raised like any other American. My nationality is American.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My ethnicity is something else, but it's weird to be asked to play that up. And now more and more we're seeing that it's like, oh, it's okay now to just be like an Indian person in a scene, that it doesn't matter that they're Indian. Like, it's like, cool, you're just another person in the room doing what every other person is doing. And that's, it's getting better. But now that we brought up acting, let's talk about auditioning for you.
Okay.
Let's get deeper into it. Because you go out a lot. You do a lot of hosting gigs.
I do a lot of hosting gigs.
Did you find when you came to LA that, like, when you were, did you have to, like, do you have to audition for hosting gigs, or do they mostly come to you because of your brand? Because you have a big social media presence, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I love that. I love anytime someone references my brand.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that. I was like,
which is like a mixture of like a Goofy movie, like Dragon Ball Z, civil rights. I think people get confused. I get a lot of like anime boys that follow me.
Right.
And then they get really angry when I'm like tweeting about how people of color should have equal rights.
They're like, back to the anime.
Yeah, back to the anime of this Japanese culture.
Well, that's the thing is, I know you from like Krillin It and then Nerdificent, but when I looked at your Twitter, I was like, Danny talks about a lot of stuff. Uh-huh. Like, it's not just
that's good, though.
Nerd
that's
culture.
My brain. Yeah.
Well, I mean, before we get, I want some history about how you even have a brand and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so you got to LA. And you...
I had already developed a following at that point. So, like...
From doing...
I would say it was, like, mostly on Twitter. During my divorce or during my separation, I, like, created an account. And to, like, get through my massive depression, I would just, like, tweet really dark jokes. And comedians loved it and started retweeting me a lot. And some of them would, like, you know, message me and be like, are you okay? But I moved out here. I had like 20,000 followers,
okay.
I would say.
Yeah.
And that's probably helped a little bit. Yeah. Like that helped give me the push of like, oh, well, I kind of already, like I could reach out to these comics that already follow me and they would kind of help me out a little bit. That didn't really happen. I actually had a really good advice from this TV writer who said, anyone that has promised you any jobs, just expect they're not going to be here when you get out here. And that he was right. You know, I had a lot of people like, oh, you're good at social media. You know, you can come and do our social media or social media for the show. And I was like, hey, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were silent. So I ended up getting a job at the Ice House Comedy Club.
Nice.
I saw randomly a Craigslist ad to work there and I drove to Pasadena where it is and like dropped off my resume and I was like, I'm not like, I need you to hire me.
Yeah.
And they did. And they were my family for like a year. They were, they're such a good club. They really care about comics and they care about their employees.
That's
and
good.
I was stupidly poor and they would like send me home with food from the kitchen. And yeah, so that's, I kind of already had a little bit of a following when I moved out here. I think it helped because I didn't know anyone.
Yeah. So then did you start doing stand-up at that point when you
I started doing stand-up and I think that's how I met Iffy. I met Iffy at Tournament of Nerds, which is a show at UCB. It's like a competition where you are like a you're like a nerd character, sketch character or something. You battle each other, like roast battle each other. And yeah, started doing stand-up, sketch, improv, writing. I got a job at a company called Guff, which I don't even know if it exists anymore, but it had other writers and stuff there. And so it was kind of just like developing a community and getting to know people out here.
And before I ask you another question, we're going to go to a commercial break. And we'll be right back. And we're back with Danny. I wanted to ask, so I think like a lot of your brand, if we can call it that, is about like being like a self-proclaimed nerd. And like I feel like me and my sisters grew up as like nerds, like loved anime and loved like just like school even, and just like we're very much into like space and shit like that. But how did you become someone that was like proud of that?
It wasn't until I came here, to be honest, because back when I was in middle school, it was something I was heavily teased for.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
I was super into anime. I only was really introduced to what I could find on Toonami, so that was like my core anime, at least at the time. I used to love writing fan fiction. I used to love being in role-playing chat rooms. That was just like my escape, and so I used to make my mom take me to Comic-Con because my family's from San Diego, and I was teased relentlessly for it. I don't know how everyone was like, yeah, anime was always cool. It's like, no, it wasn't.
No, it was not.
No, it wasn't. Maybe Pokemon, maybe for like a year or two, and then you were supposed to grow out of it, you know?
Well, how did your parents feel about it?
Oh, they thought it was weird.
Yeah.
It was like a weird sex thing. And they were kind of right. I think my mom found some... Oh, God. This is so embarrassing. Sometimes my mom listens to my podcast, but whatever. She should be used to it by now.
Yeah.
She found one of my like fan fictions, either one that I had wrote or one that I had like commented on. And it was like Vegeta and Bulma, who are two characters in Dragon Ball Z. And I was like... he would never just like go down on her like that. He would, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Like when you wrote the part about him like penetrating her or something, like I was also looking back, I'm like, what a little asshole. Yeah. I was like critiquing people's fan fiction. Damn. I was like, this is not canon. I was like 11. No, I was probably 13. I had one other girlfriend. Her name was Tiffany. I had one other girlfriend in middle school who was also into anime. So yeah, we were like kind of the weird. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like I kind of sold out a little bit because, like I said, I was kind of popular in my Dallas high school. And so I kind of like quietly would watch anime.
Yeah.
And watch late night like on Adult Swim still. But yeah, my parents thought it was weird. And I was looking at like weird porn stuff. So as all kids do.
As you
do.
Should. Yeah. I mean, as like, that's kids just a part do. Of growing up and learning what all that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And when you went to originally major in journalism,
yeah,
was that like not okay with your parents? Like, did they want you to go into anything specific?
I don't think so. I think that's they were good. Just happy that I got into UT. My older brother had gotten to UT, and the first time I applied, I didn't get in. They only take like the top 8% of their class.
Oh, really?
It's so hard to get in there. Now it's probably even less, like top 6. So at the time, I think it was top 10 when I tried to get in. So it took me, I got accepted to a bunch of other schools and I was like, no, I want to go here. I think they were just happy that I went there.
Yeah. There was no pressure to like major in anything specific.
I don't think
they're just kind of letting you.
The only thing though is that everybody, like I'm sure people dealing with FAFSA and shit like this,
mm-hmm,
like everyone just assumes that your parents are paying for your school. And it's like, right, no, I paid for it all on my own, yep, which I'm still paying for. But like whenever you're trying to get money, they just assume that your parents are like, they'll only give you so much because they're unless you literally have to divorce your parents or
right,
whatever.
You have to emancipate.
Yeah, emancipate. Then you can actually get more money. But
that's
other
such
than
bullshit.
That,
yeah, because they look at your parents' income. They don't take anything else into consideration.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's insane. Actually, yeah. I have two other brothers. None of us got their money. Yeah. None of us got money to go to college. You know, we all put ourselves through college. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm
fuck you, FAFSA.
Yeah.
That's
when you were growing up and stuff, though, did you in the back of your mind know that you liked comedy and like you liked being in front of people and like?
Yeah, like, I was on my school's dance team, so I feel like mm-hmm. I liked performing. I'm used to being like at least under lights and stuff. And then when I was in elementary school, I remember seeing Chris Rock on Comedy Central, and I wrote down a bunch of his jokes and would like say them on a note card. I'm not even kidding you. I got a little tiny TV from a garage sale that I used my chore money to get.
Aww.
And it got like, yeah, I just remember seeing his stand up, writing down some of his jokes and like telling them to people on the playground. And then my mom found my note cards and threw them away.
Oh, no.
My family's very religious. So, yeah, I do remember I liked making people laugh a lot.
So what was the problem with the Chris Rock? It's just like, girls shouldn't be out here like making jokes.
What? No, I'm pretty sure he was talking about other stuff.
Okay,
than
so like they just didn't the content of his jokes were inappropriate.
Shouldn't be for like an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that you kind of have strayed from your religious upbringing?
Yes. And yeah.
How has that been over with your family?
I feel like my mom, I'll say my immediate family, I think understands. And I think they go back and forth on their spirituality as well. When my parents got divorced, despite my dad like cheating on my mom a ton, he was also very verbally and emotionally abusive. The church, the Catholic Church, would like not let them get annulled. They made my mom's life hell. They were just like, what are you doing to fix this though? And she's like, I've been trying to fix it for 25 years.
So she wanted the divorce. Like she
wanted it. And she deserved it.
Like, but like, was she conflicted because she was religious though? Or?
I think for 25 years. Yeah. But I think by the 25th year when he was still cheating on her and mm-hmm. she found like text messages and pictures from another woman and like ran into, you know, that I think she was like, I actually cannot do this anymore.
Yeah.
And
she was fed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she they guilted her. They did everything possible to make her life hell to try to get away from my dad. They made her pay for it. Like, you have to physically, like, pay for an annulment.
That's such bullshit.
And it was, and so I think she lost some of her faith in the church having to do that.
Anyone would. What the fuck is up with that? Like, your faith should have your back and not make you the bad guy for wanting a better life.
But I feel all my aunts are like that. I think they grew up in a different time. You know, they were born in the 50s, and they grew up in a time where it was like, you are religious and you respect the man and everything is for the man. Not the man. Sounds like the government. You respect the man, but you respect the husband. Everything's right. For him. And I did not grow up like that. So yeah. I am not like that at all. And I respect the men that I date, but there's no way in hell that
there's,
I'm
like,
going
to
put them.
That's different. Yeah,
so I don't have that.
So your brand. So you...
I want to look more into your experience with auditions and acting how you've been treated. Because I know you said yourself, you are ethnically... I mean, not said. You are ethnically ambiguous. I can see you.
Yeah.
What do people usually think you are?
Mexican. Yeah. I normally get Mexican. Okay. You know, I'll get stuff like Puerto Rican or Colombian mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. something like that. I don't know. What people see in me, I don't know what people latch on to.
Did you find yourself when you first started auditioning, like, thinking that you had to become different to get more roles, or?
No, I didn't. I didn't ever feel that way. It annoyed me. Mm-hmm. I can never go back and have the life that, like, my grandmother did. She grew up in Mexico. You know, she lived through a lot of things that I didn't. And I honestly, at times, a lot of times immigrant parents and grandparents, they want you to have a different life than them. And I do feel I have a different life than her. And that's not punching down. That's just saying, like, I think she and my father wanted something different for me. And it's such a weird thing to talk about, because it's really hard to talk about it without seeing it as, like, you're punching down mm-hmm. on laborers, or you're punching down on people that didn't go to college or something like that. But that's just what my immigrant parents or grandparents wanted.
Yeah, right.
You know, and so I can't go back and change my childhood to match hers.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I do know her story. I know my father's story. I know a lot more about my family history, but I don't know. It frustrates me that they have such a singular view of both a Mexican person and a Latino person. Mm-hmm. Like, right. that bothers me, that there's such a singular view of what we should be and what we should look like, because mm-hmm. we don't all look the same. We don't all sound the same.
Yeah.
And it frustrates me that when you don't fit into this little box, that you're suddenly labeled as not being mm-hmm. Latino enough.
Yeah.
Right. And when you got an agent and started auditioning, did they ever say anything to you, or like a manager?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. I can tell now, my management when I came out here, and even some of my management now, sometimes is like really trying to capitalize on my ethnicity.
In what ways? Can you tell us, like, an example?
I don't know. No, I know that they need me more than I need them, type
right,
of thing.
Right.
And I get that too with a lot of, like, older white male writers that'll hit me up, like, hey, mm-hmm. Danny, I'm working on this script. Like, I'd love to work on it with you. I'm mm-hmm. like, no, you're just using me to get in the room.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a shit ton of you and not a ton of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now they're finally looking to add a little bit of me, not a ton. There's still – so Latinos only make up 5.8% of television and speaking roles. I don't care what anybody says. You can look at the statistics. It's 5.8% of all TV and film.
Yeah.
Past year, or at least the 2016,
that
I think.
That is nothing.
That is nothing. Yeah. And yet we're taking all the roles. That's what people think, is that we're just taking over, and we're not. And even if we did, even if you cast like a Latinx person for the entire year with all the shows, it wouldn't even make a dent in the history of television and film. So that is really frustrating to me. I feel like a lot of times people want to ride on our coattails, I guess. I get that. And I feel I'm power. I feel I've built myself up on my own against a lot of obstacles. And I'm definitely not going to have someone, like, you know, trying to latch onto that or drag me down.
Just take advantage of everything that you work so hard for.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, wow. I think a lot of minorities could relate to that. Just the idea that how they're portrayed in the media is so singular. And it's like this one type of your person. Yeah. And if you don't fit into that, then you can't work, or you can't have the, I mean, you're just not, you're invisible.
Yeah.
Well, so. I feel like also you get put into this, like, the token friend situation where you person of color in the room.
You're the token sassy friend.
Yeah. Like, you're, oh, I'm the brown friend. I'm the woman of color friend. Mm-hmm. So it kind of evens it out. But then it's like four other white people and you're like, oh, cool.
That's the majority of the hosting that Iffy and I do. At least I can speak for myself. The majority of the channels, like the nerd channels that we host at, it's extremely clear that they would just have one of us on and that would fit their quota. And that was something I really went to war with a lot of the channels that I hosted at. Not as much this year because I kind of graduated and moved up from, like, YouTube channels and stuff, even though I still do them. But a lot of these channels, I'm like, Iffy and I are just, like, they're not worth our time.
Right.
They would have an entire panel of white people and one person of color. And to them, they were like, well, we have this one person of color, so you can't say that.
That's even more damaging, I think, than not even – I mean, like, maybe not more damaging, but – the fact that it's for them like ticking a box rather than a conscious thing, like they want you there, is just so discouraging.
They would actively also tell us things that they didn't really want us to touch on, and in TV and film. So a lot of these channels, what they're doing is like you're discussing, like, you know, the latest films that are coming out. Mm-hmm. And what bothers me the most is when people, either their fans or them, will be like, stick to talking about movies. Movies are political.
Yeah.
Movies are political. They're dumbass superhero movies that everyone, which I'm also in love with, but like superhero movies come from comic books. Comic books are extremely political.
Oh,
if you're a comic book person,
they
have covered, Marvel and DC have covered almost every single war since their inception.
Yeah.
They have come out, they have had commentary. And commentary on people of color, commentary on the treatment of women. Like, it's just so frustrating to me that it's like, stick to movies.
It's all related. Like,
well, what do you think those directors are trying to say?
Yeah.
What are they trying to say? What, you know, what do you want me to talk about with Get Out? The soundtrack? What the hell is the problem with you?
Yeah.
You know? And so a lot of these channels, they said, I forgot who tweeted this, but they were talking about ESPN. And they said they want brown faces and not brown minds. And I totally agreed.
Yeah.
No, with, I mean, that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great,
I agree with
quote.
That you want to look like you're diverse, and yet you want to silence us on things that actually affect us. Yeah, it doesn't affect your other host, but it affects us. And the message of this film might hit us in a different way, in a way that director specifically intended. So you trying to quiet us about it is unacceptable.
It's like they're trying to protect the most ignorant white audience member.
Their audience. That's the majority of their audience, though. What is the majority of a lot of the audiences of a lot of these channels and fandoms?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw that with Star Wars. Yeah. God forbid they throw a woman in there and two people of color and everyone fucking lost their shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss on
you. Oh, you are. Yeah.
Everyone fucking lost their shit. And it's, and I mean, God bless them and Disney, because they're just like, we don't care.
Yeah.
They're like, you're still going to come and see it.
Yeah. And they are, and they did, and they're going to keep doing it. Which
you're going to still send death threats to Rian Johnson. But, so that is, I kind of had a falling out, and why I feel it's nice that Iffy and I have our own little hyper RPG, which was our home before here, was very great in allowing us to speak what we wanted. I think that was the biggest thing of me going there, is I told them that I didn't want to be silenced. It's not like we ever throw it in your face.
Yeah.
The majority of the time we're talking about like porn and anime and video games. Mm-hmm. But when it comes up, I don't want to be silenced about it.
You want to have your creative control over what you're saying.
And be able to like tangent on something that's
might
not directly be a thing for that culture or like that topic, but it's still like relevant somehow.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to talk about the fire topic of Mrs. Leslie Kahn.
Now,
that outside of LA, everyone's going to be like, what are you talking about? So there was this acting teacher in LA, to give you some context, who I produce a Bachelor podcast, and one of our running jokes is all the contestants on The Bachelor go to Leslie Kahn.
They probably do.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, like, it's pretty real. You're like, yeah. And so she's this acting teacher. She's one of many acting teachers.
She's
schools.
One of the most popular ones, yeah. Though.
Her name is Leslie Kahn. Leslie Kahn.
Yeah, okay. She, her students, it's almost like this cult. They just have this intense respect for their teacher and their school, which is fine. Whatever. You're learning a craft. What craft? Whoa, cult craft. Wow. I'm getting into, like, witches now in my head. But she came out. There was a recording that got leaked.
Essentially, what happened was several people of color were sent a audio clip of her in one of her workshops telling a white actress to dye her hair and change her name to Rosa Ramirez. And pretend, the girl said, no, I'm like 100% white. And they were like, okay, but you can pass as Latina. So dye your hair, change your name, change your IMDb, go get new headshots. My favorite thing was that she said, like, wear something fucking sparkly and red, right. Like big earrings,
my God.
And tell them you're Latina. And that's how they're going to shoot, which I've never done in a headshot. Yeah. I'm like, oh, is that what we're supposed to be doing?
Your costume? Yeah.
Doesn't my face just work?
She also was like, or you can do Armenian, but no one really cares about that.
Well, I think she said, I normally get told I'm also look Armenian. Yeah. And she was like, well, that's not going to help you out here.
Yeah.
Which that whole thing, it was a lot. It was actually, I hate using this term, but it was extremely triggering. Know that agents and I know that other people are doing this because I'm in a lot of acting groups on Facebook and I've shared on Twitter. I had to cut out their names, but mm-hmm. I've shared on Twitter when actresses will be like, my agent told me I need to have a, like, an ethically ambiguous last name. They think it'll get me more roles. So anyways, you guys, like, recommend ones that you think will look good for me.
God.
Should be a fun experiment.
I hate that more than anything.
That's the thing that Leslie said too, was like, oh, yeah. Let's just do an experiment. Mm-hmm. So picking up someone's heritage and culture is just like an experiment to them. It's a hat they can put on, and when it doesn't work, they can take it off and try on someone else's hat, try on someone else's culture. And it's so upsetting to me because studios are finally making a tiny bit of space for us, and you want that too.
Yeah.
You also want that. You're not helping the studio's problem. I know you think it's all of us are just getting hired up in here, but like I said, 5.8%, we're not.
Yeah.
And they're finally trying to change that, and you want to go under the guise of being someone else. And aside from that message, which was incredibly frustrating, and I was a student there, and that was like a whole thing. I wasn't in that class, but I was sent that audio. Aside from that, were the people trying to justify it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People like, well, if you're an actor, you're supposed to take on other roles.
That fucking infuriates me.
I'm like, no, yeah, take on, like, be an astronaut, not someone's culture. Not someone's culture.
Yeah.
Not someone's heritage.
Yeah. And we'll get into that more after the break.
And we're back. Sorry, I was never going to bring us back.
No, but what you were saying earlier is so, I mean, it resonates with me so hard just because I'm very passionate about like when white actresses take roles that are of color, like either in the script or purposely, like they took away a role that should have been an Asian woman or a, like, I remember Emma Stone was in this one movie where in the script she says, I'm half Chinese.
Must be Asian,
or Aloha, like, or something like that.
And even Scarlett Johansson being Ghost in the Shell. Like that infuriates me to no end because a lot of people will justify it being like, it's an anime, but it's like, no, actually it's more than that because this is a role that a lot of Asian women would have loved, you know what I mean? Would have thrived.
It would have made
in.
A difference.
And Scarlett Johansson doesn't need another fucking action movie. You know what I mean? Like,
she's not struggling for roles.
Yeah, and so I'm disappointed both in the people that cast her and also kind of in Scarlett Johansson because it's like she can take a stand and use her platform for something better.
I think that actors will hopefully be more aware of this.
Yeah.
You know, I think that sometimes they get handed roles. I think Natalie Portman had the same thing, though.
Yeah.
Didn't she? Was it for Annihilation or something where someone was like, hey, do you know that this was a woman of color?
Yeah.
Really? And I think in her interview, I don't know if it was Annihilation. It was definitely something where in her interview she was like, really? well, that sucks. You know, where she didn't know. And yeah. I think if she had known.
I hope so. I mean, that's my hope.
And a lot of people, I think, will be like, it's really easy to just, like, look. But, like, Annihilation and things like that, I don't know if you would actually have known that that was supposed to go yeah. to a woman of color.
Yeah.
So what I'm hoping now is that they just ask your manager. Dude, yeah. ask your agent. Put your assistant up to it. Look at the history of this. Yeah. I don't want to fuck this up.
If it says yeah. in the script, especially, like, I'm going to say this line where it's like, I'm an Asian person, or I'm this, or like, even like, Aladdin's becoming a live action movie pretty soon. And I was yeah. like, I was so happy because I was like, finally, an Arab actress will have her moment to fucking shine.
Yeah.
And they cast the one half Indian, half white, which is great. She's still of color, but I can't even name an Arab actress that's known in America. Yeah. Like, we are not represented in the slightest. Right. And the fact that even that was given to someone that was just passable, in quotes, you know what yeah. I mean, as an Arab, is yeah. infuriating.
Well, it's even like Prince of Persia. Like, come on.
Oh, my God.
Jake.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. That was too easy. Yeah. It's in the title.
Yeah.
Prince of Persia. And then that's a video game. And people are like, but it's a video game and it's this. But it's like, no, but that could have been something so powerful for the minorities that are represented in that. So it's infuriating.
Just on a side note, I was accidentally named as like the casting director for Aladdin because I had tweeted out a casting call, which was an open casting call yeah. that was shared in my acting group that was asked for us to share. And I tweeted it out and I guess nobody else had shared it. And I became the authority on it. It was like in Teen Vogue.
Oh my
it was
God.
In like
what?
Variety, I think
really?
Deadline. Yeah. So I was sent hundreds of submissions, even though it said where to submit it on the thing. And I encourage actors to never do that. Please never track down a casting director's Facebook. I'm not a casting director,
yeah.
but don't what? People were tracking down my like Facebook. They were sending me auditions of them singing. They were tagging me on Instagram.
Oh,
it was,
no.
It was like a running joke, last year. That I just like at, when I was at Hyper because of that. So that was also journalism is dead.
Yeah.
Journalism is dead.
If you need a proof, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
that's
I was
wild.
You could literally look up, you could also Google the email address that it said to send it to, and it was like Cindy Tolan Casting, which is in New York.
Yeah.
But yet, because I had shared it, it was like, please, Miss Danny, like, please look
oh,
at my
no.
thing. And oh my God, some of them were bad, though. This is what I'll say. Some of them were bad that they were, like, Cuban people that were like, hey, but I can kind of pass. I'm like, that's gross. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, listen. And also my, like, fellow Latinas, look, we don't need to take roles from, like, this goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, don't take a role from an Arab person. So.
Yeah, it's hard. I really love Riz Ahmed has so many good interviews where he speaks on like being a minority and what kind of roles you can get as a minority. Like he said, there are like three phases. Like one is when you're cast as the stereotype, which
right.
is like for him, like a terrorist, for example. And the second one is where you're cast as someone that you can still utilize your culture, but it's not negative.
Yeah.
And then the third one is when that your ethnicity is not called to question at all. You're just like
it's
Mark
so nice.
Or like
you're
whatever.
Just a person.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You're just a person that lives yeah. here like yeah. everybody else.
Yeah. His rise to like fame or like recognition is something I really admire. He's carried himself so well and
well just, yeah, he's one of the few like brat like serious yeah. brown actors that you're like, "Wow, what a career."
Yeah.
And there's not even a lot of women like that.
No.
I can't even really name one. There's Riz Ahmed.
Yeah. Well, today is Omar Sharif's birthday. We're recording it on Tuesday, April 10th. And Omar Sharif is this Egyptian actor who's not alive anymore, but I'm obsessed with. And he was one of the first men of color, Egyptian, like an Arab man that like was able to act. He acted like opposite Barbara Streisand, and he played a Jewish man. And like, I mean, obviously that had its own. It was the 60s. I can't give excuses for that other than that. But, but yeah, I hope it's getting more awareness. Just like actors taking roles that are better suited for other people, or like,
yeah.
Sorry, wow. I can talk about that forever. I'm just mad.
Yeah, no, I think it's so important to just be who you are.
Yeah.
And not, like, you don't need to be brown. Like, that advice that Leslie Kahn gave just bums me out. Because it's like, if you're a damn good actress, mm-hmm. you're going to get a role. Like,
yeah.
if you work hard, you don't need to change your name. Don't need to
well,
wear
there's
a
this-
spicy... red dress. I don't even know like, what that description is.
Excuse me, I prefer purple. But no, like, another thing that goes around that I hear a lot from people is like, well, Hollywood just doesn't want white actresses anymore.
I hear that. I was just going to say that.
I hear that all the time.
I have so many actor friends, like, and I love them. Like, they're sweet, but like, I have a couple white friends that are just like, well, people, you're more on brand right now anyway. Like, people want people like you. Ugh. Or like people don't want like a white guy anymore. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, if you can't take like a little bit of attention off yourself, like, you're not supporting anybody.
But that's not even true. That's not even true.
No, it's really not.
And the thing is, you can look at even new, they even have new white actresses coming in. We have Millie Bobby Brown. Mm-hmm. We have that girl that was in It.
Yeah.
We have like, so you can't even tell, we have Riverdale kids.
Yeah.
You can't even tell me that they're not, they're picking up new. And we also have Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
We have Daisy Ridley. We have whoever, I forgot her name, who played Jyn Erso. And I mean, they're dominating, yeah, Star Wars, at least.
Yeah.
The white women are the main protagonists.
Yeah.
We also have, and then we have Natalie Portman. We have...
The vast majority of protagonists are white,
yeah,
and straight.
Yeah.
And
you don't need to worry about,
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's like you...
Emma Stone, Emma Watson, yeah, Emma, all the, yeah, Emmas. Like, no,
all
but
the
I'm,
Emmas!
But I'm serious, yeah, here that I'm tired of hearing that when I'm like,
Jennifer
I pulled
Lawrence.
Up... You can pull Jennifer Lawrence, like, yeah, they're still, like you said, Scarlett Johansson. So like, and it would be like, well, they're already established. I'm like, but all, what about all these, yeah, new ones coming, uh-huh, in? You can't tell me that they don't want you anymore.
Yeah.
That's that to me is offensive and annoying.
Yeah. 100%. Because it's like, you're, yeah, they're making an excuse as to why they're not getting hired when really like maybe you just suck.
It might be like, you specifically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
yeah,
the thing. It's like, there will always be room for more white people. That's
always
just this world we live in.
I didn't even
so
know what Riverdale was. And then I realized it was just a show about white people. Like, I didn't even know about it until very recently.
It's about a murder.
I'm just like, oh,
yeah,
just
if you look
another
at a lot
CW
of
show,
yeah,
that has
a lot
all
of CW
white people.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, copy. I don't want to, that's all I need to know.
I think they might have, some sprinkles of people of color.
But they're sprinkles.
Yeah, that's, yeah, what we are most, yeah, of the time. And we do have some, you know, we do have an emergence of television and film, mainly because we're the ones that are doing it,
mm-hmm,
yeah, you know, that are making it. I hate whenever people are like, well, if you want to see yourself represented, just do it yourself. I'm like, yeah, that's cool because I have the same amount of money as,
right,
Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Or Lena Dunham or like whatever,
yeah,
the fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
but that doesn't mean we're not trying.
Oh, for sure.
We're trying.
Look at Issa Rae. Like, she had,
yeah,
a YouTube show for,
yeah,
a long time and she had her own little following and she finally got her fucking big break where she got,
right,
public recognition for Insecure, and,
yeah,
it's like finally she's able to put herself out there on her own terms because it's her fucking show.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
HBO wouldn't have given it to her if she just, like, or even Donald Glover, like,
right,
it wasn't until
he
won
was
the
a
Grammy.
YouTuber.
Yeah,
yeah, people don't even remember that, like, he,
yeah,
started out smaller,
yeah,
you know,
he's
and built his own brand
group. Yeah,
he built his brand and, yeah, that's kind of like, so when you're a person of color, a lot of times you have to jump through all these hoops.
Yeah,
you have to build it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then get those opportunities. So,
yeah.
Yeah, which is actually crazy because now I feel like everyone who's like acting, they tell you to at least take an improv class, you know, get
know.
Some range, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like back in the day, like most of these women, like some actresses, you're like, yeah, they're a good actress, but they're not a like amazing actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just like a nice, pretty woman. And you're like, OK, well, back in the day, it felt a lot easier. You could just, if you were white, like walk into audition, do well in an audition, you had the role. But now it's like, okay, so let's see.
Yeah.
It's just like so many more layers to,
yeah,
it. It's so much harder. Not that I audition or ever will, because I have no interest,
yeah,
in anything.
I'm sure auditioning like is a lesson in self-confidence, if nothing else.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be. Yeah.
So through auditioning and all the other stuff, how did you finally, like, I don't know, become your own entity as, like, as a person? Like, Anna was asking earlier, like, how, if the hosting jobs come to you now.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. But how did that transition even happen?
I mean, I originally started hosting because I would joke a lot on, like, my Facebook and Twitter and things like that about all of the nerd stuff I was into. So I was making, like, Star Wars jokes or anime or whatever, and or Marvel and DC, which I still make those jokes, but it's so rough dealing sometimes with those fans.
Those fans are the worst.
I'm just like, I'm just like, excuse me, I am also one of you.
Yeah.
I remember one time I had called out DC fans and I said, we need mm-hmm. to chill out. And they were like, why are you calling us out? I said, we. I used the pronoun we, meaning I am also one yeah. of you. And I'm telling you, we need to chill out.
Yeah, but the same idea if you're a girl that likes video games or whatever. It's like your opinion is invalid because you're not a white guy.
Yeah.
And I deal with it all the time if I like criticize a video game or criticize an anime or a superhero movie or whatever. And it's just, I can only imagine if you publicly do that on Twitter.
I assume you have, your mentions are crazy.
I think I'm used to them.
Yeah.
I did have the filter on, which I would just filter it. God, technology's crazy. It would filter out so much, to be honest. Not even people I'd muted. It would just filter. Not even people that were saying bad words. It just knew I didn't want to see this stuff.
Yeah.
But then I started to miss out on a lot of people that were saying good things, too. And that was hard. I wouldn't see it like, oh, I loved you on Collider today or something like that. And so I turned my filter off. I should probably turn it back on. I also opened my DMs for a while, for several months. Sometimes they're secretly open. because I deal a lot with depression and illness, and I am a human just like everyone else. And there's sometimes when I can't sleep and I'll say, you know, if you need advice on love or life, hit me up. And I really cherish those times when people write me because it reminds me that there's another person on the other side of the screen. And I think it reminds them of me as like mm-hmm. that of me as well. Because a lot of the comments that I get, that women get on YouTube, but that I had to go through a lot this year, I had to take a step back. Like, honestly, even with Iffy and I's podcast, which I didn't, our anime one, I didn't get hate for that, but when I would be on other channels, like the amount I had to talk to my therapist about it. Like the amount of hate and disgusting comments that I got, it was, I had to take a break from
it. That's so unfortunate.
It was, yeah. My friend Maud Garrett has actually shared, I think publicly, like a week's worth. She has a huge following. She shared she's also in the nerd world and she goes to junkets and she's very professional. And she shared like a week's worth of comments and they were too, it was like, you should be raped and left in a dumpster. Like, Jesus. You have a horse face, Bob. Like, I get that all the time. You guys get over horses, okay? I think you have a fetish. I would get, like, she has a huge jaw, never bring her back here. Or, like, she looks trans. Or, like, whatever. Like, I would get, she looks manly. Like, all the stuff that I would get, which was just sickening, you know? Like, this people would be hateful.
Just hiding behind a screen, thinking they can say whatever they want.
Yeah.
How many actuallys do you think you get in your mentions on a daily?
My favorite are anime ones because now I know people at those companies.
Oh.
So somebody was like, did you know that Akira Toriyama also created? And then Funimation, who I love, and I love you guys so much. They own the rights to Dragon Ball Z and they dub it here in the U.S. And I grew up heavily with them. They'll respond and be like, yeah, she does.
Oh, <that's> nice.
Or the voice actors will respond and they'll be like, yeah, she does.
Oh.
So I don't even have to, I don't even, they'll be like, excuse me. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
That's nice.
I'm sure the kid in you is probably like, it's crazy that like voice actors or like that company is like reaching out to you
it's
at all.
So
right?
Crazy.
That would blow my mind.
I used to go to Comic-Con specifically for them. Yeah. I used to buy the VHS tapes and I was so obsessed with this.
Same.
Anime, which is huge now. I get it. It's huge now. But at the time it was like, you were pretty much a nerd for liking it. It was, at least where I grew up, it was in Orange County and then in Texas. And so, even though that's where Funimation is, but, yeah. And now I get to host with them. I get to do videos with them. I get to work. I get to audition for them. I try to remind myself of that when I get, you know, overwhelmed with the awfulness of the internet and the awfulness of fandoms. I try to remind myself that that people would die to do this.
Mm-hmm. And like the little kid in you is probably like, I mean,
this is cool. Yeah.
What I tell myself is like, imagine talking to the younger version of yourself and like telling her what you're doing now. And it's just like,
my therapist makes me do that. And I always cry. I think it's because I was bullied so much. I would just be like, hold on, hold on.
I was bullied a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
We grew up in San Diego. So growing up in Comic-Con wasn't that weird, but it was different back then. It was different. And me and my sisters would like hide our like manga collection and just like, we were really into like J-rock and like Japanese rock. And we were just like really not, we, even though we loved it with each other, it was not something we were, like, talking about.
Oh, my brothers and I did that, too. Yeah. Is that so weird? That's how, like, shamed you were.
Yeah.
You know? It was, oh, that's weird. It would be like when you're in high school and it's like, yeah, I bet my brother's watching porn. I am, too. We're not going to talk about it. That's how we treated anime. Like, yeah. Just normal clothes on, like, Toonami, whatever anime. Yeah. It was like, we're not going to talk about it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that defines who you are, I think, the things that you grew up with. And
yeah,
it's
I agree.
So cool that it's part of your life now.
Yeah. And it's like tattooed on me. So.
Me too. Me and my sisters have matching Sailor
Moon
tattoos.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And I'm assuming your parents, clearly, they're supportive of what you're doing now?
Yeah.
They don't ever say anything like grad school.
Oh, God, no. You know, I think they know better now. Yeah. I think that they...
You say now, so has it been a journey for that to be...
Yeah, I think when I got divorced, they were concerned for me. Mm-hmm. I think the idea of me being a young woman on my own coming out here when it was like, what, you had a life. You had what everyone wants to them, which is a husband, a house, you know, and I gave all that up to be a poor writer. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing good, but I don't own a house because it's almost impossible here in Hollywood. Yeah. But yeah, I think that they were concerned. I was also stupidly poor for several years, and I got insanely ill with my autoimmune stuff. And so it took a while to like pull myself out of it. And I think that they respected not only that, but where I'm at now.
That's good.
Are you open to talking about like what your autoimmune stuff is?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
What's your?
Thing? I have Hashimoto's, which is where your I have Hashimoto's and I have Lyme disease. I have chronic Lyme, and that can. There's actually a lot of celebrities that have been vocal about their experiences with Lyme. It kind of affects everyone differently, but when you have chronic Lyme, it can really ruin your life. Yeah. Can ruin your life. And Hashimoto's can ruin your life as well. I'm so irritated with people telling me like, oh, I just take a thyroid pill and I'm fine. I'm like, that's great. That's good for you. You know, there's thousands of women and men who that doesn't work for them. And I had to change my entire lifestyle, and still I'll probably even get people from this episode, because I've talked about it on other podcasts before, and I have Hashimoto sufferers that write me and will just be like, thank you so much because it ruined my life.
Yeah.
Like I was at the doctor today before I came here. You know, I'm losing my hair. I have patches of it falling out. My thyroid is enlarged. I still am working constantly. I had to change my diet. I'm following this like autoimmune protocol diet. I don't need suggestions, by the way, listeners. Please don't.
Like, please leave.
I've had so many doctors. I see naturopathic doctors. I see endocrinologists. I've done acupuncture. I've done cryotherapy. I've done everything. I follow Hashimoto's podcast. Like, I got it. I'm good. But some of us can't just click and cure ourselves. I also live a very stressful life. I'm auditioning, I'm writing, I'm submitting, I'm hosting. I'm not going to give that up. I did for a summer. I like just completely tried to heal myself. And anyways, I've done everything. And I used to be really bitter. I used to be insanely bitter about my illnesses. It was so hard for me to, like, some of the medication I had to take, I would like throw up in my car before an audition, go and sit down and be like, nobody here.
Yeah.
I mean, they might have thrown up, but it was by choice. Yeah. They might have been puking earlier. But, you know, like, I was so frustrated. And then at times, I can't dwell on it if I think of the commenters that write me, because I think they see me and they see the way that I look and they want to take me down a peg when I've already been taken down several pegs. You know, aside from being a woman of color out here, having to deal with two chronic illnesses and depression, which I didn't touch on this, but I had a suicide attempt like during my divorce. I had to go to the hospital. It's like I've been taken down so many pegs. Like, just let me have it.
I mean,
just let me have this.
That's kind of why I wanted to at least bring it up a little bit, just because I want the listeners to, I mean, I feel like I want them to connect with you in ways that maybe they didn't expect, you know?
Yeah.
But can we really quickly, I know we're running out of time, but how does your family deal with mental illness? Like, when you did have those things going on?
I don't know. I think depression runs in my family, and I don't know. I know that my dad probably never felt like he could really openly talk about it with his family. Again, my family's pretty secretive, mm-hmm, and yeah. I feel like it's kind of just something you're supposed to internalize. I feel like in the Latinx community in general, we don't really talk about mental health very much.
Yeah.
Definitely not as much as we should. And I do feel like people of color in general, it's kind of like, well, our families and our parents and our grandparents dealt with so much, and you can't handle your daily life.
Yep.
When they were being yeah. targeted and having racist mm-hmm. slurs yelled at them as they try to walk to school, and you can't even handle your daily life. You want to kill yourself, and your family was like literally threatened, you know, and was fleeing for their lives. And I think that there's still that mentality. And it's, you know, for me, I know that my illness, my chronic illness and my depression go hand in hand. Like, that's something my doctor actually told me. But I think that anyone could be depressed. Like, mm-hmm. I really do. I have friends that are successful out here that are on TV shows and making movies, and they want to kill themselves, you know? And I think that it's so, I don't think that there's one singular face to depression. And I hate that people see me or they see someone that's like in front of the camera and they're like, well, you couldn't possibly be depressed, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it is when my antibodies are eating away at my tissue. But even yeah. if you didn't have that, you know, I have kids that write me and they're just like, I have two parents, you know, they're still married and I live in the house with them, and I'm suicidal and I feel like I shouldn't be. And my yeah. therapist made me take away that word should or shouldn't, you know, where it was like, I should want to be alive. I should want to live this life. And now I just say, I want to be alive.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. But yeah, that I do feel like, you know, a lot of people of color feel like they can't necessarily talk about their depression when there's so much else going on.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, every other day I am like I have a job. I do well. I make a nice salary. But I am so left and right sometimes where yeah. I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
I'll be just like talking to people and I'd be like, why do I bother? You know, like yeah. I'm just yeah. like, what am I even doing? And then I'll just have a whole day where I'm just like, just trying to get through yeah. the day. And that but is
because
it.
You and I and a lot of other minorities, like you included, Danny, it's like your mental, it's like it's internalized. You're supposed to internalize it yeah. and deal with it yourself.
You suck it up yeah. and you keep going. Yeah. And then every once in yeah. a while it's like, no, maybe I just want to lay on the ground and cry.
Yeah. I think it's also, there's an element in my opinion that's like trying to be a model minority in a way, like trying to be.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I think we all have yeah. to. We all have yeah. to. I really feel like that's in every aspect, not just in entertainment and people's daily lives and mm-hmm. in job interviews and like everything. You have to be a model minority.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not allowed tiring. To fuck up. It's yeah. exhausting. I do want to just say, like, the world in general is really hostile, and especially right now, and it's so traumatic. And I feel like that is another thing that will seep in, whether you think it does or not. I think it does seep into yeah. you and can affect your mental health, especially, you know, in some of these communities, especially like the Latinx community that I feel like is extremely targeted mm-hmm. right now. And yeah. and has been, I don't want to say just right now, but like, especially with who the president is, has been extremely targeted. And I do think that seeps into your mental health.
Yeah, this might sound ignorant for you, but just for the listeners that aren't aware, what does Latinx mean?
Well, that's non-gendered yeah. because the Spanish language in general is, yeah. you know, you have Latino or Latina. Instead, Latinx is just non-gendered. I kind of go back and forth with it. I try to use Latinx as much as possible, but I am a Latina, mm-hmm. so I refer to myself as Latina. I think that you should be allowed to refer to yourself however yeah. you do. But I try to, you know, we're all evolving.
Yeah.
We're all learning and evolving. And I do think that so much of the growth that I have had the last couple of years, and where my strength and my empathy comes from, is from other women of color mm-hmm. in the community that really helped me understand myself and some of my weaknesses and some of my privileges and things like that. I think that I owe so much of my growth and who I am now, who is someone that's outspoken on platforms and is someone that like calls out channels and people that I've worked with for shitty things that they've done, is because I have so many women of color, I feel like, that I've who have come before me mm-hmm. and have helped me get there. Yeah, that's I definitely beautiful. Did not get this on my yeah. own.
Yeah. That's, I'm into that.
Yeah, I'm into that. Super.
That's why we had to have you on.
I'm so glad you were here. Thank you so much for being here, being so open.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Are we way over time? I don't know. There's no rules here.
Yeah, there's no... Yeah.
Yes, again, thank you for having us. Having us.
Thank you so much for having us. We all record in this studio.
So I forget where.
Just stick around. Show. You guys can be on Nerdificent.
Yeah. I would love
it
that.
It is true, though. I don't even know what show I'm on anymore. And welcome to the Daily Ethnically Ambiguous. Yes. So do you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yes. I'm at Ms. It's M-S Dani, D-A-N-I, and then Fernandez, F-E-R-N-A-N-D-E-Z. And on all social medias, and I have a podcast here called Nerdificent with Ify Wadiwe, and we tackle like the past, present, and future of nerd stuff and tech. It's been great. It's been an overwhelming response from fans that just really love it. Apple has shouted us out a couple of times. It's been great.
That's
really, really excited and blessed that we have the fans that we do and that we get to talk about things we're passionate about.
That's dope.
It's a real fun time. Yeah. I sit here every time just staring at them like, what?
Dude, I want to be here.
What?
You can. Yeah.
I don't know anything they're talking about. I'm just like, what?
Well, hopefully you learn by the end of the episode.
I'm always just like...
It's fascinating.
Looking back and forth at you guys like, yeah. What? But yeah. What do we have? We have
our... our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, where our goodies are at, like footnotes and stuff, and we'll link... Danny's contact info there too. And then
Ethnically Ambig on Instagram, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's about it for us today.
Do we want to touch on anything else? I have no idea. It's such a weird, it's because we're recording earlier in the week than normal, so my brain hasn't hit Ethnically Ambiguous recording days yet. So I'm still kind of like, okay, what show are we recording?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Rate, review, subscribe.
Yes, please.
I guess in the opposite order of what I just said. Subscribe last. You'll get it. And Shereen, you gonna bite that ass?
I bite that ass.